destroyed by the war economically. Virtually their entire armies gone, replaced by new recruits barely trained. Russia is suffering badly as well, but you look at the relative power, who's going to win in a stalemate? Not a big secret. Ukraine is likely to be destroyed. Well, U.S. position is got to continue, got to severely weaken Russia. Somehow, by some miracle, Ukraine will be stronger when this goes on. Britain follows the United States. But by now, Britain, especially the Tories and Keir Starmer's Labour Party, are virtually colonies of the United States. There was recently a big discussion at Chatham House, the British counterpart to the Center for Foreign Affairs, almost entirely in favour of escalating the war. Well, what about Europe? So far, European elites are going along with the United States. Populations, it's not at all clear. Public opinion, judging by polls, is calling for negotiations. The business world in Europe is deeply concerned. Putin's criminal aggression was also an act of criminal stupidity from his point of view. Instead of an accommodation with Europe, which is greatly in the interest of both Europe and Russia, their natural commercial partners. Russia has resources and minerals. Europe has technology and industry and so on. That's the basis for the German industrial system, which has been so successful. Instead of that, Putin handed Washington its greatest wish on a silver platter. He said, okay, Europe, go join the United States. Don't have an accommodation with us. Go be a satellite of the United States, which means that you will move towards deindustrialization. Economist magazine, among others, have been warning that Europe's going to move towards deindustrialization if it continues to join the NATO-based US-run system, which is most of the world now regards as a proxy war between Russia and the United States over Ukrainian bodies. Well, how's that going to eventuate? Actually, it goes well beyond that. They're very serious issues. Remember that the United States is developing a major war against China, not only militarily. NATO is now expanded under U.S. demands to the Indo-Pacific. NATO is a Pacific power, meaning the U.S. has Europe in its pocket for its confrontation with China, building up what the United States calls encircling China with a ring of heavily armed states with U.S. precision weapons aimed at China, big military maneuvers and the naval maneuvers in the Pacific. Meanwhile, the Biden administration went beyond that to call for a commercial war to prevent Chinese development for a generation. Prevent them, we can't compete with them, so let's prevent them from developing. Prevent them from getting advanced technology. The supply chains in the world are so intricate that almost everything involves some U.S. Input, patents, technology, whatever. The Biden administration says nobody can use any of this for commercial relations with China. Think what that means for the Netherlands. The Netherlands has the world's most advanced lithographic industry, which produces essential parts for semiconductors, for chips. Netherlands is being ordered by Washington, stop dealing with your major market, China. It's a pretty serious blow to the Netherlands industry. Will they accept it? We don't know. Same with South Korea. The United States is telling Samsung, South Korea, you got to cut yourself off from your major market because we have some patents that you use. Are they going to accept it? Same with Japanese industry. It's right in the balance now. Nobody knows how they're going to react. Are they going to willingly deindustrialize to go along with US policy of global domination? The global South already isn't doing it. They're saying we make our own, we don't accept the sanctions, we make our own arrangements with China, with Russia, India, Indonesia, Latin American countries. This is a major confrontation developing up in the world scene. And to go back to the question about the banks, I think Krugman's right. Nobody knows. The Fed now has a real problem. If they raise interest rates, it's going to increase the attack on the banks. If they don't lower interest rates, it's going to increase the inflation. And that raises another question. What's causing the inflation? Well, there's fairly reasonable evidence from Economic Policy Institute economists like Joseph Stiglitz and others that a large part of the inflation is just market power. Take food prices. Food prices just shot up last year, one of the highest growths in 50 years. Meanwhile, the half a dozen monopolies that own the food distribution system, Cargill, Tyson, the rest, have profits coming out of their ears. Well, one way to cut back inflation is for them to cut prices. That's not the way capitalism works. If you can make money, you make money. Well, how much is this in contributing to inflation? According to the EPI analysts, Economic Policy Institute, quite substantially. It's another way the Fed might try to deal with inflation, or the Congress could cut down price inflation, which is raising profits to astronomical levels in the monopolies that control the food industry. Incidentally, why monopolies? One of that is part of that is the effect of deregulation. You deregulate, the big fish eat up the small fish. Pretty soon you have a semi-monopolized economy. These are all things that are policy decisions. They're not laws of nature. Could be done differently.
The IAEA director, that's the International Atomic Energy Agency, UN body, its director general is Rafael Grossi, and he's been warning of the dangers posed by nuclear reactors in Ukraine. Shelling and fighting near the reactors could trigger, Grossi said, a nuclear disaster. Meanwhile, the Biden administration is going ahead with modernization of U.S. nuclear weapons. Is this another example of when lunatics control the asylum, you have these kinds of outcomes?
Unfortunately, one of the major problems, what Dan Ellsberg and a couple of others have been trying to get people to understand for years, is the growing threat of nuclear war. People talk about it in Congress as if it's a joke. Okay, let's have a small nuclear war with China. One of the top American generals in the Asia sphere just predicted that we're going to have a war with China in 2 years. It's beyond insanity. There can't be a war between nuclear powers. The power that launched the first strike would itself be destroyed, even if there's no retaliatory strike, just by nuclear winter. But this is bandied about as if it's a possibility. Meanwhile, U.S. strategic planning under Trump, expanded by Biden, is to prepare for two nuclear wars, one with Russia, one with China. Yes, the nuclear reactors are a major problem, but it goes beyond that. I mean, suppose the United States is now you're sending tanks to Ukraine. Now it's starting jet planes. Well, sooner or later, Russia's likely to attack the supply routes. The United States military analysts are a little surprised that Russia's held back so far. You have leading figures visiting Kiev. You remember anybody visiting Baghdad when the United States was pounding it to dust? Not my recollection. In fact, a few peace volunteers were ordered out of the country because the country was being so devastated. Well, Ukraine's being badly hit. It's not that. But who says they won't go on to do it? Who says they won't go on to attack Western Ukraine heavily, including the supply routes, maybe even beyond? Then you get into confrontations with NATO. There was a Washington Post report a couple months ago reporting that Pentagon recognizes that U.S. personnel are actually directing the advanced weapons in Ukraine that are hitting Russian forces, HIMARS and others. It's moving up the escalation ladder. How far will it go? You have people in the hawkish sector, Atlantic Council, those who say, maybe we can sink the Black Sea fleet of the Russians. They're going to say, thank you. That was nice. We didn't really care much about them. Or are they going to respond? In fact, let's go back to that Pew poll. They did not even list nuclear war as one of the issues that people could rank. It's considered so low that we don't even think about it. Okay, let's have a nuclear war. Let's have a nuclear disaster that's far worse than Chernobyl. Insanity is the only word you can use for it. But remember, it's built into the institutions. And if you think about, again, the question you raised before, what about the guy sitting in the CEO chair? What about the Mexican worker on the in the Permian region? There are answers. They have reasons. And we got to change those reasons.
And speaking of planetary dangers, the START Treaty is an agreement for nuclear arms reduction between the U.S. and Russia. And it establishes limits on deployed strategic nuclear warheads. Recently, Russia suspended its participation in the START Treaty. Is this one of the casualties of the current geopolitical situation? And what's the danger of Russia's action?
Well, Russia was sharply condemned for that, rightly condemned. They didn't withdraw from the START Treaty. They suspended participation, but said they'd continue to live up to it. That was very harmful, negative act, should be criticized. There's a little bit of background. We're not supposed to talk about that. That's called whataboutism. But let's be rational and talk about what's involved. The arms control regime was painstakingly developed over 60 years. A lot of hard work and negotiation, a lot of public pressure, huge public demonstrations in the United States and Europe led Reagan to accept Gorbachev's proposals for ending the INF Treaty, the Intermediate Short-Range Missile Treaty in Europe. It was a very important step in 1987. Eisenhower had initiated thinking about the Open Skies Treaty, later developed. Kennedy made some steps. Over time, there was an ABM treaty, which was very important. Over time, it developed up until George W. Bush. Starting with George W. Bush, the Republican Party has been systematically dismantling 60 years of arms control. Bush dismantled the ABM treaty. That's very crucial. It's a very great danger to Russia to have ABM installations right on the border of Russia. First of all, everyone understands that these are first strike weapons. The only thing they could possibly do is deter a retaliatory strike. So they're essentially first strike weapons. Furthermore, they're convertible to having first strike missiles installed in them right on the near the Russian border. And it was a pretext by Obama and others that these are to defend Europe against non-existent Iranian missiles. Who's going to believe that? Well, maybe intellectuals can believe it, but nobody in their right mind would. This is an assault against Russia and a dangerous one, and was understood to be. Trump came along, his wrecking ball wanted to destroy the whole story, got rid of the Reagan-Gorbachev INF treaty to make it very clear that he meant it. Right away, within days, launched a missile which violated the treaty, tell the Russians we mean it. Okay, that's the INF treaty. Later, he got rid of the Open Skies Treaty. He was after the Open START, the New START Treaty. Didn't quite have time. Biden came in just in time to agree to the Russian proposals to extend it, literally within days. Otherwise, it would have expired. Okay, now the Russians have suspended that one. All of this is race to disaster. And the main criminals in this happen to be the Republican Party in the United States. Others are by no means saintly, far from it. And Putin's act should be condemned, but it's not in isolation.
Your classic book with Ed Herman is Manufacturing Consent. If you were updating it today, you would, of course, replace the Soviet Union with China and or Russia, and add, of course, the growth of social media. Anything else?
We did have a revision of it in 2002, in which we pointed out that we'd made a mistake, and the fifth filter was too narrow, anti-communism, that kind of lost its force for a while, and when the Russia collapsed, we should have broadened it to just finding an enemy. That's the real filter. And the enemy shifts. For some years, it was the global war on terror, another force. Now it's China, peer competitor, got to stop them. Russia threatening to conquer the world, even though it can't conquer towns a couple kilometers from the border. So those are the new ones. If it won't be that, it'll be something new, aliens, who knows. So yes, that has to be changed. You're right about all of the things you mentioned. Social media is not a small point. It's having a very complex effect on American society. One effect is ignorance is enormous. I mentioned the results on nuclear weapons. Go back to the U.S. invasion of Iraq. Majority of the population thought that Saddam Hussein was responsible for 9/11. I mean, beyond outlandish, but they had heard enough propaganda here so that people believed it. Well, social media are making all of this worse. There was recently a study of where young people, what's called Generation X, where do they get their news? Almost nobody reads the newspapers. Almost nobody reads television, watches television. Very few people even look at Facebook. They're getting it from TikTok, Instagram. What kind of a world, what kind of a community is going to try to understand the world from what they're getting from watching people having fun on TikTok? The other effect of social media is to drive people into self-reinforcing bubbles. We're all subject to this. I mean, people like me look at your program, look at Democracy Now. You don't look at Breitbart, okay? Conversely, the same is true. So people are going into self-reinforcing bubbles. The media, whatever you think about them, have at least some limited range, some discussion. Well, another monster is coming along. The chatbot system. It's a wonderful system for creating disinformation, demonization, defamation. It'll be picked up by systems that use bots and so on. That's very serious danger coming. Probably no way to control it. I should point out that these systems have essentially no scientific interest. They're playing, you like high-tech plagiarism, okay, it's fun to play with, but it does have all of these potential very serious negative effects. These are all major problems. Well, all of that is part of manufacturing consent. Walter Lippmann's dream.
Well, the bewildered herd needs to be tamed and directed.
Walter Lippmann, he's a remember of the leading public intellectual of the 20th century, Wilson, Roosevelt, Kennedy, liberal. He said the population are a bewildered herd, and we, the smart guys, have to be protected from the roar and trampling of the bewildered herd as we make the decisions and set the policy, of course, in the interest of everyone. We're the best and the brightest. Get those people out of our hair, and we'll run the world for everybody's benefit. We've seen how that works.
Returning to the United States, how do we overcome propaganda and some techniques for challenging savage capitalism?
The way you challenge propaganda is the way you're doing it. Just more active, more engaged. As for savage capitalism, there's two steps. One smaller step is to eliminate the savage part. It's not utopian to say, let's go back to what we had pre-Reagan. Not exactly utopian, okay? Let's have a moderately harsh capitalism in which there's some minimum wage, decent wages, rights for people, and so on. Far from ideal, but much better than what we've had since. No $50 trillion robbery. That's one step. Another step is to get rid of the core problem. And here we have really effective propaganda, really effective. Let's go back to the early stages of the Industrial Revolution in the United States. Working people took for granted that the wage contract is a totally illegitimate assault on their basic rights. They turn you into what were openly called wage slaves. Why should we follow the orders of a master for our waking lives? It was considered an abomination. It was even a slogan of the Republican Party under Lincoln that this is intolerable. This lasted through into the early 20th century, finally crushed by Wilson's Red Scare, which basically wiped out the Socialist Party and labor movement. Some recovery in the 30s, but not to this extent. Now that's gone. People regard it as their highest goal in life to be subjected to the orders of a master for most of your waking life. That's really effective propaganda. That can change too. There already are proposals for worker participation in management of not utopian. They have it in Germany and other places. That can go on to be, why don't we take the enterprise over for ourselves? Why should we follow the orders of some banker in New York? We can run this place better ourselves. Start getting a totally different world at that point. I don't think that's all that far away.
The lunatics seemingly control the asylum. What signs of sanity are there out there to counter the lunatics?
Plenty. There's lots of popular activism. We mentioned some of it. It's in the streets, young people calling for decent treatment of others, concern for others. Sometimes it may go a little bit overboard, but a lot of it is very solid and serious. Extinction Rebellion, Sunrise Movement, let's save the planet from destruction. Well, there are lots of voices, yours, Democracy Now!, Chris Hedges, lots of sites, Common Dreams, Truth Out, many others. All of these are efforts to create an alternative world in which human beings can survive decently. Those are the signs of hope for the world.
All right, Noam. Well, thanks a lot. It's great to spend this time with you once again.
Good to be with you, as always.
Take good care.
Thank you.
That was Noam Chomsky, When Lunatics Run the Asylum. I talked with him in late March. Noam Chomsky, the legendary scholar activist, is America's leading dissident intellectual. This program is produced by Alternative Radio, based in Boulder, Colorado. We are an independent, progressive nonprofit in our 37th year. We're supported solely by individuals just like you. To access our complete audio and book catalog and our Chomsky archive, just go to our website, alternativeradio.org. Again, our website where we are podcasting, alternativeradio.org. Professor Chomsky and I have done a series of books together. Our latest is Notes on Resistance. For copies of today's program, Noam Chomsky, When Lunatics Run the Asylum, and for the book, Notes on Resistance, just call us 1-800-444-1977. Again, that's 1-800-444-1977. Our website, alternativeradio.org. Again, alternativeradio.org. We're offering MP3s, PDFs, and written transcripts of this program at no charge. Just call us 1-800-444-1977. Special thanks to Balaji Narasimhan. Joe Ricci is our general manager and editor. I'm David Barsamian. Thank you for listening.
This is Jesse Brown, the host of Canada Land, Canada's only media criticism program. Every week I talk to some of the most interesting people in the country about some of the things that matter most. We talk about the news media, about comedy, film, music, and politics. And you can now listen on CJSF 90.1 FM every Monday at 5 p.m. Wait for it.